Welcome to Hope Beyond the Badge, a podcast that brings awareness, inspiration, and conversation together for first responders, families, and others interested in mental well-being and first response. New episodes weekly with your hosts, Jay Bailey and Linda Kokoros. Jay is a father, a military veteran, worked in the fire service for 18 years, and carries a diagnosis of PTSD. Linda is a mom, a wife, a certified life coach for first responders, and a suicide loss survivor of a first responder. Let's talk about it. On today's episode, we'll be speaking with John and Jackie Rossigno. John is a fire captain and military veteran. John and Jackie are here today to discuss how trauma encountered through duty can impact a person's life and influence their relationships with others. John, Jackie, thank you both so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Guys, thank you so much for coming in today and chatting with us. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, your family, kids, where you live, etc.
John and I are originally from Saugus. We met when we were 12 and we went to middle school together. And we reconnected later in life after he got home from the military. We are 40 years old. We live in Wilmington, Massachusetts now. John's a fire captain. And I am a contract manager for a restaurant company. And we have two children, twins, 5 years old, a boy and a girl, Genevieve and John Jr. And we have a golden retriever who's two, who pretty much tears up our entire house.
I know all about that puppy stuff. We have a young puppy too, does the same thing.
Yeah, we love, you know, the sports, the dance. We're always busy on the weekends. We love to travel with the kids and New Hampshire, you know, Winnipesaukee, things like that. So we love being outside.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing.
What branch of the military were you in, John?
The Army Guard. Enlisted originally because they were at that point, they're prepping for the invasion of Iraq. So you know how the recruiters like to entice people and whatnot. So they were, the WMD thing was a big thing at the time. So that's what I ended up like kind of going down the road for that, because it was a quick ship. So then deployed to Iraq in 04 05, was up in the Bajir, Iraq area, Fob Summerall, and then down at Butler Range Complex, which was east of Baghdad.
Well, thank you for your service, John. You mentioned weapons of mass destruction. Did you work with explosive ordnance?
No, I was chemical operations. We were going over there to mitigate anything that they found.
Okay, all right.
That was our initial mission. Obviously, that didn't happen. Our actual mission was not that after that, but it just became, you know, general convoy, FOBs, you know, security stuff.
Did you go through McClellan, Fort McClellan, or was that after the Chemical Corps had moved to Leonard Wood?
It was moved. I went over to Fort Leonard Wood.
And now you're a fire captain. Is that something that you always knew? Like, did you always know that you wanted to work in the fire service? Or is that something that you decided after you completed your military service?
Kind of. I guess a little bit. I was always kind of drawn to it. I wasn't exactly sure at that point, like when I was younger, like kind of getting out of high school, and I knew that going in the military would increase my chances to get on and all that stuff too. So that was one of the many reasons of why I kind of went down the military path, to try and get myself into my foot in the door. I mean, I didn't get on right after I got back either. It took a little while.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Iraq, just about your time there, and about
maybe how it impacted you?
No, yeah, I definitely lost some weight over there. Just because that was one of the things, just because of the stress, you're always like, you're always working and you're going, going, going. So, and then when your chow hall gets blown up, then you don't have really a place to eat. So then you kind of, kind of do the ramen noodle thing for a while. And then, but yeah, I lost weight, kind of just become like kind of desensitized to things a little bit. I remember one night, an RPG blew up, it hit the HESCO barrier in front of our, that was in front of our barracks, in front of the barracks I'm in. And the guy I'm with just started laughing. And it's like, so it's, yeah, you become very, very desensitized over there.
Wow. What was that experience like for you, John, while you were there? In general, like, can you give us a breakdown of what that experience was like for you, in the military?
For me, I mean, I definitely don't regret going in the military at all. It def it w it does give you some good skills, and the value, I guess the values or that they try to kind of build on or encourage are like good core values to help, like, if, especially for people that are kind of like at that point in their life where they don't know which way they're going to go. College isn't really their way, and it's either that or you become a townie and go down that road.
Yeah.
So
Was it hard
yeah.
for you when you came home? Like you said that you didn't like go right into the fire department,
Yeah.
but was it hard for you to like settle back into normal everyday
I don't
life?
think I don't think I've ever settled back into normal everyday life.
Okay. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
I don't think anyone does. When you go to, if when you go to war, you or yeah, or you see the things that you see in the job that we do, it, I don't know what the term normal really is with that, because you become jaded. You see, I mean, you can see some really amazing like bits of humanity, but then you also see like the atrocities of humanity, like torture chambers and people that work, in the victims of those things. And
Yeah.
it's just, so it's all, it's going to, it hardens you a little bit.
Yeah. So, obviously, from that experience, you have a diagnosis of PTSD and trauma, right? Experience. How has that been for you, like as far as when you came back from the military, did you get treatment right away, or did you know what you were experiencing?
No, I think early on, in that port, like at the early on in the war, I think they, I don't think they really were anticipating the impacts of like prolonged, like two front combat can have on the troops. So, yeah, it's, and it's when it's like an, I don't think that they were prepared for that. It's like a whole concept of urban warfare. You're like, it just creates a whole atmosphere that I don't think the military was prepared for at that point, or the VA. And I, it took me a while to kind of even acknowledge, I guess, that I had like an actual problem. It was more just go through the motions, like, oh, I'll go to the VA, get checked out, just to get my foot in the door like they told me to. But no one directed us. No one directed me like, oh, you should start here and go down this road, or it, that I honestly, it, I've been home, I don't know, 60, 20, almost whatever it is now, 2004 or whatever, right? Almost 20 years at this point. And It wasn't until after leaving home base in this year, and like going through home base stuff, I really was introduced to what the V like on the VA side, because the VA kind of picked up. It's like they were able to kind of like have a liaison that really put effort in and opened up all these like different programs that I had no idea existed for the VA at all.
Sounds like attending the VA home base program that you possibly have been able to embrace some healing for yourself.
Yeah, once I went like kind of got involved over at the MGH home, with home base, in focused getting like care there. Their approach was a lot more unique, and just kind of it's just effective. It works like very well. I mean, for my opinion, it's helped tremendously. But I guess I'm only, that's me. I don't know how it is on the other side with Jackie on her side, but
Don't worry, we're going to ask Jackie herself.
I've wanted to jump in a bunch of times, but I'm holding myself back.
but the thing is that like when he came home from the military, right, you reconnected when he came back, right?
Yeah, but at that time it was weird because there wasn't a lot of people in our hometown that had gone deployed. So anybody that did deploy, like their names were on the town hall and they're coming home. And so everybody knew that he had deployed. I knew John from when he was in middle school and he was like a very goofy, kind of crazy kid. So in one way, the military, I think, did help him grow up, but he did come back a different person, and it was kind of like known around town that he wasn't the crazy kid he was, when he was younger. So I hadn't really noticed too much of a difference though until we really got to know each other.
So you started to notice that there might be something off when you did start to get to know him a bit.
I didn't come from a military family. My dad, he might have been in the reserves during Vietnam, and so my family was not involved in the military fire, anything like that. So I had no idea about PTSD or anything that had to do with the things that he had seen and the things that maybe you see in the fire and police service. So I guess I was naive. I grew up same as John, though, like middle class, middle to low class in Saugus, and had a pretty nice life. But so when I met John, we had a normal type of relationship, but there were some things in the beginning that I noticed that were different, that I was, we knew of the PTSD diagnosis, but I didn't really fully understand what it meant. It just felt like a word that was connected to his name, but I hadn't really looked into what it actually was until we started maybe 10 years later. I just ended up altering my life around some of the things that I noticed, and we just lived that way for 10 years. And I didn't even realize that that was connected to PTSD. I didn't realize there was anybody else that had symptoms like that. I thought it was just very unique to him.
Wow. Do you want to share with us some of those things that you noticed?
Some of the symptoms of, PTSD, there's, the nightmares. I don't know if John, want me to, I mean, these are very the standard symptoms, but I had never seen anyone that had experienced nightmares before, and they're real. Like I had read about them, but they are real. I would see them, and I didn't know if I should wake them up, and lots of, symptoms with insomnia and sleep, lots of problems with that. Difficulty concentrating on things. I mean, John's very, very smart. He is going to law school this year coming up, but difficulty with concentration. Whenever we would go out in public, always wanting to, be hypervigilant, looking around, not wanting to be in places where there was a lot of people. Like, we haven't gone to Disney World yet. We're going to hold off on that, I think. Places like that, I would always avoid. I would just kind of try to, make his life a little bit less stressful by taking over. And it kind of come naturally with like a firefighter wife. The husband isn't home, the wife takes over and tries to take charge, and it just became a natural flow in our life. So we avoided a lot of situations. Any type of conflict in public, irritability and things like that. So I would just, kind of get us out of the situation quickly. So I also became very hypervigilant of my surroundings and where we were going and if there was easy ways to get out. So I became very hypervigilant myself.
Yeah. So basically, counteracting or what needed to happen to have
Yeah.
be comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't, I guess I would say it wasn't too bad as we were in the early stages of our relationship, but then, I mean, from what I've heard
I
from
would say it was
people,
after the tornado that it got worse.
we had a tornado hit our house when we were living in
And I
Raleigh.
was home.
Yeah, and I don't know if that maybe triggered something because John was home, and when it hit the house, it actually did hit the house, and we had to move and things like that, and we moved in with his parents, so it right before our wedding, so like another type of like big event like that maybe could re-trigger things,
Yeah.
maybe after COVID can re-trigger. So and as time goes on, it doesn't go away if it's left untreated. And it's not just PTSD, trauma in general. If it doesn't get treated, it continues to build upon itself and get worse from our experience. So that's what kind of led us to home base.
I would imagine that being in close proximity to a tornado is going to have some kind of an emotional impact on anyone that has also been in close proximity to wartime explosions.
Anytime there's fireworks, I love fireworks. My kids were born on the 5th of July, so I was in labor on the 4th of July. Fireworks, John can't do fireworks. He, things like that. He's very hypervigilant with that stuff, so we try to avoid that.
Well, I can do them if I know they're happening,
If
because
he's
if I
doing the
don't know they're
fireworks himself,
happening, or I'm
yeah.
watching them and I know they're happening, but if someone just starts lighting them off, that's a different story.
And fireworks is sort of a clear example of a trauma reaction. And then there's others that are a lot more subtle and more difficult to recognize. Jackie, it sounds like along the way you were able to recognize a sort of disruptive presence in your lives, but not necessarily aware that those disruptions were actually trauma symptoms. And then you got to home base and came to that awareness through whatever information and services they provided. Was that a relief? Like to come to a deeper or better understanding and to know that there is help and people do recover.
Yes, it was. I mean, it was. I guess it wasn't until I was in the program that when they put up on the screen what the symptoms were, I mean, I cried during the program. I have 2 days of an intensive therapy for us, or educational, they would say it was, because we weren't actually a patient, your support person in that program. I didn't realize that anybody else, and it was interesting because there was like 20 or 30 men with the exact same thing, and all of the support people with the exact same thing. Every word on that screen fit it to a T. I mean, there's other things like included in different types of trauma, possibly from childhood, and everybody's different. They may have had addictions and alcoholism, but around the PTSD symptoms specifically, it was like literally everything I had dealt with for the past 10 years. And it was like, okay, like, we can do something with this. Like there, we can, like, this is not just who you are. This is a symptom of things, and maybe I can learn ways to help here.
Was it sort of a relief for you when you did the virtual training to see the slides on the screen?
Oh, definitely. It was definitely a relief because I didn't, I just thought, I guess this was his personality and I wasn't sure if there was, and this is probably a lifelong thing for us. It depends on the situation for everybody with PTSD. Whether it's like a one-time event and you do certain therapy and then you're healed from it. This is probably going to be a never-ending lifelong journey for us. And it's like getting a diagnosis of, some other type of disease. This is a mental illness, and you just learn how to alter your life, around it and work on healing. I wish we had I feel like the programs that are coming out now, they weren't available 5 or 6, maybe they were, but we weren't aware of them. And the help that we were receiving felt a little bit like a band-aid instead of taking the band-aid off and figuring out what the problem is underneath the band-aid. And I
Yeah.
just thought that's how it always was. This is the only help that we can get. But I had found out about that program Homebase because I used to do the runs that they had and I enjoy running, and that's how I found out about them. Otherwise, I'm not sure John would have known about it. Wounded Warrior has been around for a while. We also are connected with them. But Homebase was a little bit different, and we were really excited to be a part of that.
I want to get into asking John about being a firefighter, if that's okay. John, you've started to recognize your symptoms of PTSD and trauma, right? And have started a process of healing, working with your family and on yourself. But as a firefighter, is that difficult to talk about within your department? Can we talk about that culture a little bit?
It's a very unique kind of culture. I mean, it's literally like you have a second family, basically. I mean, there's not many places or other types of careers other than like the military where I mean, I spend at least 100 days a year with these guys. You know, we live together, eat together, everything. So, and it's for 30 years. You know, so so you can, you know, you it's. Definitely very unique. When it relates, obviously, it's also, you know, has a lot of veterans concentrated in it, you know, so we come existing, like coming already with baggage, anyways, and it's, and then whatever else, like, you know, Jackie had mentioned earlier, you know, like whatever existing childhood, you know, whatever stuff, pre job stuff, but, I think it's getting better, the culture a little bit with regards to stress and behavioral health and those aspects in particular with the fire service. But I mean, I think that, you know, everyone's our every one of your firefighters think cancer, right? But in all reality, more firefighters die every year from suicide than they do at fires. More cops die every year from suicide than from shootings. It's they it, it they're thinking it's almost double the amount at or you know with some of those with some of the studies out there. And it's you know I think that is more of a concern than or I mean you can't like you know compare which is worse because it's they're both terrible. It's just I think you know with the IFF you know with you know, them like starting that center of excellence, it's starting to kind of pull that like pull the curtain back a little bit. I know from my department personally now, we've become a lot more proactive with that. You know, when if we get it, if I'll get notified, you know, by our command staff if in the event of a major incident, and then we'll. From our union side and the department side, follow up and you know have them, you know, just trying to check do kind of check-ins and whatnot. And then the same thing, you know, same with you know, because with this job, it's you know the statistics are you know I forget what it is, but I think it's like 25, 30% what more likely to become addicted to alcohol and drugs on top of that, and so it's just a it can be a very tough culture if you're struggling sometimes to be like right now because you have this mix of old and new and it's still not like you know 100% you know I mean we're not going to sit around probably and open up and share our feelings like you see on you know
Well, this
some
that
of the shows.
well, this is the thing that we're trying to do here is, we're Hope Beyond the Badge, and we lost our son 4.5 years ago. He was a police officer in Abington, and since then, I can't unknow what I know now since we lost him, right? With all the other stuff that I know now of people struggling and not going and get help, and being scared of being judged just that judgment, that stigma, and also fear of like losing their job. But at the same time, we want to ultimately see conversation, talk, and normal in your department. It's needed, right? Because if you guys only talked a bit more about, I'm struggling here after this whatever incident I'm after being at. I'm struggling. I'm having a hard time with this, and I need to get help rather than worrying about, well, what are they going to think of me? I'm like a what's so whatever else they want to you fear of. So, we want to make talking to normal about mental health and issues, and really, being honest about your feelings. Otherwise, how can you start healing? How can you start getting better or recovering from what you're going through?
I
So,
can't agree more. It's
emotion.
it is odd though. I will say, I mean, Jay, maybe you could, you I don't know what your experience is with it, but it's one of those places where we won't bring it up, but if someone is struggling or has that or is on like kind of down with themselves, it's a pretty good group in that sense. Like if someone's struggling, they'll try and help pick them up, but no one wants to see someone. But it's just getting there and trying to intervene. You see so many guys struggling. It's hard.
I agree with that. You mentioned living in close proximity, right? Eating dinner together. It's the firehouse is a home, and it's also a veteran-heavy culture, and that baggage comes along with it. I think it takes tremendous strength to reach out for help, and I think that's overlooked. I think the first responder population, we are of we're rescuers, right? So that's serves as a barrier to finding that strength to reach out and say, I'm the person that needs help, especially to our coworkers, to our brothers and sisters. It shouldn't. Hopefully, conversations like the ones that one that we're having right now will contribute to change. But you mentioned after a major incident, sometimes you would be contacted, and then you check in with people. That's a change in the culture right there. That's things going the right way. I'm wondering if you've had anybody ever reach out to you for help. So it wasn't a mandated check-in. If somebody ever said, "Hey, I'm not doing well," if there were resources available, if those resources were successful, because I agree with one of the, well, I agree with all the points that you made, but specifically the one where somebody does have the strength to say, "Hey, I'm not doing well. I'm drinking myself to sleep. I'm angry all the time." Whatever they're able to squeak out and admit that things ain't perfect and they could use some help, when that moment happens and they are connected to the right resources, it often leads to positive results. And I'm wondering if you've had any experience with that.
To an extent, I would say I've had people reach out that were either struggling a little bit with like you said, drugs or alcohol or whatnot. I've offered services to members that I think or I've been like or based on my conversations with them maybe in a tough spot. There's only I think been like one or two I'd say that have actually like kind of disclosed like really like said, hey, I am having a tough time here, unfortunately. But the data shows that you can go get treatment and then come back and you're able to kind of go back to work. I mean, it's not like they don't invest lots of money into us. I mean, the government has spent a lot of money into us for our training, right? I mean, between the military, between this and all that,
Might as well spend the money on some healing too.
well, it's cheaper and it all not but it's also cheaper to like have someone go get treatment than it is to retrain someone. You're taking all that experience, all that knowledge away forever.
That's right. And you mentioned the word experience, which I think is an word when it comes to the conversation about trauma and first response. Because if you have someone that's been doing the job for a long time, it does add up. And if they are emotionally balanced, if they have a sense of mental well-being because they've found some healing, then that's what it is. It's experience that can be relied upon in future calls. And if they don't, then it continues to add up in a different way. It continues to derail, have a negative impact on the individual and
families.
And families. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jackie, do you want to chime in there?
Yeah, I don't even know where to start with that.
Let me recap for you, Jackie. We left off where John was talking about the departments getting better, sort of being like proactive. But in a nutshell, John had said Jordan, his, you know, career so far, eating, sleeping and drinking with these guys every day, that up to now, maybe two guys have come to him seeking help. And we know there's a lot more guys needing help for sure. Myself and Jackie, we talked about, had a conversation off air earlier on about guys who get help, that they're not weak. They're not the weak ones. I wrote it down, Jackie, because I got goosebumps when you said it to me. So do you want to talk about that?
What I meant by that is because even the stigma is still there, as much as we want to say that it's not. As an outsider, I know a lot that goes on in these fire departments, and these are very serious issues that nobody's approaching these people about, and they're just kind of like, oh, I don't want to butt in, I'm gonna stay out. And I understand that part of it, but at the same time, it's like, we know things are going on and we're not doing anything, and you're just sitting there wait. So it's a weird kind of dynamic. But what, even us coming on this podcast, this is new. I had never told anybody about the things that we were going through for 10 years. My mom would be the only person I would talk to because she was the only one that understood. I didn't have any friends that, I had a few fire wife friends. I didn't have any friends that had military husbands. Nobody understood. And if I had said the things that we were going through, they would just think that that was completely like crazy. But everybody in the program seemed to understand. So even I asked John, are you sure you want to go on this? Are you sure you want to let people know that we went to the home-based program? So there's still a stigma. And then we said, you know what? What are they going to say? You're a loser? Are they going to say, oh, you're a loser because you got help and you're bettering your life? You're bettering it for your wife and your children. You're creating like removing generational trauma from your life. Like, that's cool. Like, that's attractive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, mature, emotionally regulated people find that to be a leader. Like, that's what a leader is. A leader is not, you know, like drinking away your problems and trying to, you know, ruin your whole family. And the divorce rate in the fire and the police, it's there for a reason, because it's not just because these people are not nice, or, you know, it's because there's probably mental illness there from years of trauma that marriages can't survive unless we have the tools to learn how to deal with these type of industries. Like I said, I was never dated a fire, never dated a policeman. And so this was all new to me. I didn't have the tools. So I hope that by sharing this, you know, that John and I are kind of like a team. Like, well, they can call us losers together, because I don't think you're a loser. My kids don't think you're a loser. My mom, you know what I mean? If that's it, that's all I care about. And I'm hoping that maybe this will reach a wife or a spouse or a partner or anybody that thinks that they're alone in this, and they're not. You know, there's other people out here like you, and you can get help, and it doesn't have to be the way it is. You can live a different life.
Yeah.
Still be a firefighter if you want, or maybe you need to get out of the profession, and that's okay too.
Yeah. What would you like to see, like, as a firefighter wife who has gone through struggles in the family unit because of, you know, John's PTSD and trauma and the whole stuff that has been going on? Like, what would you like, honestly, like, what would you like to see happen, like, in fire departments for guys getting help, for your husband to be able to get help and freely be able to talk about it?
It's going to take a while, I think, for this to break through, but it takes some strong people to kind of stand up and be different than everybody else. And people are going to probably listen to this and think, oh, they're not tough, or they are. They're going to say that, but it doesn't matter to us what people say. You have to stop worrying about what everybody else is thinking and worry about yourself and your own family and how to get through the days. Sometimes take one day at a time, but I think it needs to be brought into the departments, maybe by, the top people. Start bringing people in to learn and teach. Bring in the families, like get the family back in there, get the communities back together. And it's not just like a, it's not going to be the guy at your department that's going to get you all the help that you need. It's like a village. So everybody needs to be connected. You got to stop going against each other and fighting against each other. Like, I couldn't do this alone. I needed home base. I need my mom. I needed a lot of people to help here. So it takes a village, and the resources are still not fully out there to a lot of people yet. So when you start talking about, hey, I went to home base, like, or I went to this other program, it maybe will get in somebody's ear that it's not that hard to get set up with this, and it's not that weird to do something like this.
It's really not. When I
No.
initially reached out to help, I was pretty vocal about it in my department, for some of the
Yeah.
reasons John hit on earlier, like the intimacy of the culture. We're sitting there, breaking bread together, a couple meals a day, living together, and I knew that there was other people that were having problems as well, and I wasn't comfortable. Wasn't my place to point at them and speak to them. So instead, I just started talking about my own stuff because this, it was a process, but I was beginning to have, a weight removed from me, and I wanted that for other people that I could tell was suffering similarly to the way that I was. And I was surprised that those critiques I expected never came, right? Like, people weren't saying, "What's he talking about?" And I was surprised by that nobody was mocking the fact that I was bringing up, "Hey, we're all a little screwed up," and it makes a lot of sense. Jackie, I think you made a really good point earlier that other cultures don't experience this, right? These types of regular encounters with trauma. If somebody works in retail and their coworker falls from a ladder and breaks their leg and they come home, what happened today? That has overtaken their perspective. So and so fell off the ladder, broke their leg, and it's that's what's going on. And it's something that within our culture, it wouldn't even come up in conversation for reasons that make sense, but ultimately add up and are detrimental to our mental health, especially with the more serious and more traumatic calls. And then we go to our kids' soccer games or wherever we go, and we're balled up and uncomfortable, and everybody can feel that energy, and we don't want to talk about it, right? And I think those of us that have gotten some help realize that talking about it's kind of the only way. So I applaud you two for being here talking about it.
I think that's a good way to put it too, is that by like kind of talking about your own thing and slipping in, how you got help for it, it seems to open it up to other people to ask questions and some of the resources and there's resources for the families too. It's not just the person that's struggling, it's the whole family. So that, and I was surprised that John was open to talking about it, because he's a very closed off type of person. So when he said he was okay with doing this, because I'm, kind of out there a little bit loud and stuff, and John's not. So I was really proud of him that he actually is doing this. This is a big deal for him to do too.
One thing about like a lot of the guys going and getting help or seeking help, unfortunately, a lot of the times it's they're seeking help when it's in crisis, when at a stage where they're in crisis that they're rock bottom and nowhere to go. I mean, it would be lovely if there was any listeners out there, or not lovely shouldn't be the word, but it'd be nice. If there's first responders listening out there, to say, you know what, it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to talk about this type of stuff. Don't let it get to a crisis situation before you go and seek help. And again, like what you said, Jackie, it's not only the first responder or veteran that is, going through that. It's the whole family, right? It affects the whole family who are close around that person, that it affects everybody.
And I would say sometimes the person that's struggling can't see how deep they're struggling. So, like if you are a support person or a wife or a spouse or a friend, and you see something that seems, abnormal, you should say something, say something, and try to guide them in the right direction. Because it's like, if they're that low, they may not guide themselves where they need to go. So that's where the education part comes in for the spouse to learn about what to look for and what to be aware of, and to not, not give up and not just kind of take an approach of, this isn't the type of marriage that I want. Obviously, in our situation, there's something going on that's deeper, and that comes first. So it takes you to take a step back and to try to really take a look at what's going on with this person. And it might not just be the way they are. There might be bigger issues.
What would you say to a first responder spouse, a wife, spouse? What advice would you give,
I
go
would,
through your own healing as a family right now? What would
I
you say?
think, yeah, there's also this like kind of stigma for the wives to also be tough, take care of everything, don't talk about anything, and just, also be very tough. And I've tried to be tough for 10 plus years, and I would say, don't give up, make sure that you're safe and that everything is, you have boundaries in place, but don't give up if you haven't tried an option that possibly could help with mental illness, and maybe put the marriage on hold if you need to make sure that, the person is healthy, because you're not going to be able to fix a marriage if a person is unhealthy. So if you're a wife or a spouse, I would say, take a step away from your marriage and look at them as a human being that may be having struggles. But don't try to do it on your own. It's a lot to take on your own, because you're dealing with the mental illness or the struggles on a daily basis, and then you're actually trying to guide them to get help. But you also need to get help yourself, probably. I go to a trauma therapist myself, and they help me work through, as John's going to his, I go to mine. So I would highly suggest that you also get your own. But I would suggest that it's someone that's very educated in the specific area that you want to work on. If it's PTSD, find someone that deals with PTSD. I have had a therapist that just say, oh, take a bath, get some self-care, bubble bath. That doesn't solve complex trauma as a family member. So addiction, alcohol, all those things. So really research and find somebody. And that's why I loved Homebase, because they had very specified doctors in that specific area. And there's other programs. Homebase is not just the one, counselors that know what they're talking about, that maybe have been in this industry, that understand. And John has experienced that as well, right, John? Like with,
Yeah, I mean,
finding counselors and therapists that aren't trained in this area.
I think you need to have someone that is familiar with not just the area, but for like on our side, it's got to be someone that's familiar with our type of lifestyles or our current like in our it's a different livelihood, it's a different mentality. It's I mean. We're a profession that will literally, Jay said he was like waiting for someone to laugh at him and at the kitchen table, right? We'll laugh at someone when they come in and it, like for getting hurt, but between each other and stuff. But then it's whatever. It's a weird environment. So I think it's absolutely like you have these organizations like Fraternal Order of Firefighters, military veterans, and that are local organizations that are, I think, trying to kind of bridge this gap a little, and where it's run by local firefighters in the area that are familiar with, familiar with the people in the communities and relate to them. one of the guys that on my old department, he was involved in it. He's, he had some, he was he's a vet, had some issues, and same thing. He got involved with this and once realized, something needed to get done to change it, so might as well try and do something.
Yeah. Well, I know from going through our trauma ourselves as a family, with losing Alex, that diving into helping others find a way of healing has been such a therapy for me personally. And I know you doing this together, like the podcast, right, for us, has definitely also been some rewarding part of healing. I can only speak for myself, I can't speak for Jay, but it has been definitely rewarding for us doing this podcast and talking and interacting with some folks like yourself. But John, I just have to touch a little point on here. What does it feel like for you having Jackie be so supportive of you, helping you heal?
I would love to hear this one. Keep this
I tell
recorded,
you, because
please.
I have so much admiration for you, and it has to feel good anyway inside. It has to. That's what I'm feeling. Like I
Yeah,
want
I
to
mean,
support me.
yeah, it's definitely helpful. I don't think I would have been able to do any of this stuff without her help and being there. I don't, that's, there's no way I would have been able to kind of, get to this point at
Yeah.
all, like without her. It's just, I her mother, same thing, has been very supportive. The two of them have been super supportive to me and helpful, and I don't know really what I don't think it would have been. I don't think that the alternative is like would have been healthy for me.
Yeah. I love that you recognize that. That she is a very huge supportive factor in your healing part of life. And I also heard you say the word, I don't feel I wouldn't be at this point where I am now. And also recognizing that you are healing and you are, a little bit better off than where you were before you started any programs. So
Oh, yeah.
That's on the road to health, right? Healthy healing. So that's good. I like that. Jackie,
Yeah,
you want to chime in there?
we're in a totally different place than we were last year. And it took, from when we decided to do this, we had talked about it 2 years ago, and then it took a whole nother year before we even did it. And that took almost an intervention for it to happen. So when I don't want other people to have to go through that, but you, that's what I said when I say don't give up, and it wasn't, it was slow because it needed to be that way for us, but this is 3 years in the making of trying to start the process to heal. So we're excited about where we're headed. And it definitely, we've definitely changed. We're not the same people we were. It's almost like starting over.
Yeah.
But John is a beautiful person with like so smart, and I just didn't want my kids to miss out on that. And I was like, I'm gonna not gonna stop until I fight for my kids, to have the person that I know, and not this mental illness or struggle take over.
Yeah. I love that.
It's not easy, I will say, but I encourage other people to try to get as educated as they can, and to lean on other wives or spouses or friends like Linda, people that know, that understand, that don't judge, because it can be a very judgmental thing, to talk about those type of problems, because they think, some of the problems are just like you brought onto yourself, but there's things underneath that cause those problems.
Yeah. And you can always connect with me anytime.
Thank you, Linda. You're amazing.
Thank you. You are too. So, what I just want to sort of end today, by saying thank you for coming in. John, I hope that you continue on with always being open to different types of treatment that are going to be helpful for you, and continuing on with that. Never give up. And also Jackie yourself, like continuing on to be his support person to all of this. I mean, if I'm listening in tonight, if I'm going to be a spouse or someone listening in tonight, I'm going to be like, wow, this is one strong woman.
Oh, thank
And
you.
yeah, this is one
Hi.
strong woman that is very, very supportive of her husband. And you're definitely a guiding light for others that are going to be listening in. Yeah, that the struggle is real. It's out there.
Yes.
And it's not easy going through that every day, but you definitely make it, you know that, hey, this is worth it to help our family heal through it all. And John, I wish you the best and
No, thank you.
continue on with your healing. Continue on to, encourage guys in your department to talk about really how they're feeling, not just like, hey, I'm
No,
drinking
I,
too
yeah,
much, or
no,
whatever
I,
it might be,
yeah.
that type of stuff. But like, I'm hoping that the departments will start to continue to recognize that it is there. And if the rates of first responders and firemen and police officers are still suicide, the numbers are still way up there. Well, then guess what? There still is a huge issue.
Yeah. I mean,
And
there's a great research paper that was published by the Ruderman Foundation in Newton, and it just highlights all of these issues that,
yeah.
it's a real problem.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's acknowledged. I don't, because oftentimes people don't really think that we're really there's a person behind it that goes home to their family.
Yeah. And we all need to realize that for sure. And I know that I'm never going to stop talking to make it that it's a norm. I'm never going to stop talking. I'm always going to be heard, and I know this guy is never going to stop talking. So, and I'm hoping that today's podcast will also help you to continue talking about and being open about your own struggles. And thank you for coming on tonight.
No,
We
thank
really
you for having
appreciate it.
me. I mean,
Thank you for having
yeah, no,
us.
thank you. Yeah,
I feel
thanks for what
lucky
you're
we met
doing.
you.
Thanks.
Well, I feel equally as lucky.
Yeah, it's no, it's awesome what you're doing. It's really great, and just that it like it's definitely been like it was definitely like another challenge that I was able to like kind of overcome by
Yeah,
doing
this,
this.
yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Well, it wasn't too bad, right?
No.
There you go. Thank
Another
you,
step
guys.
towards healing.
Yes,
Yeah,
another
that's
step
right.
towards healing. It's about opening up.
I think that you guys are setting a powerful example for other people that just haven't like had the courage to start healing yet. I know that when I mean, life's always a struggle to some degree, but when I was really suffering, if I heard a fire captain on a podcast talking about reaching out for help and having his life get better, and then like listening to you both speak about your marriage in terms of improvement, I mean, that would have been quite a message for me to hear during that time. And I think it would have given me hope.
Hope and courage to start healing, Jay, right?
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to finish off up by saying that John and Jackie are in this together, as a family, going through healing and figuring it out as they go. They're an inspiration to myself and Jay. Their commitment shines through in the interview. We hope that other veterans who are first responders do the same. Stand up for your mental well-being. You deserve that. Till next time.